May 3rd, 2025. Welcome to This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series. I'm your host, Don Brown, and I'm coming to you from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown in our beautiful Banting Park home. And I'm joined by my extraordinary producer, the mighty Max Martinson, down at the WAUK Studios in Radio Park on Victory Drive. And we're coming to you. We're acting locally, thinking globally. And as many of you know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And in honor of that, I am honored to have here on the podcast, Dr. Kelly Piasek, who, as many of you know, is president of the Waukesha School Board. But she is here in her capacity as the, executive vice president of research, of clinical research at Rogers Behavioral Health?
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic. And you know, Kelly's career in this field spans over 25 years, largely in an executive capacity, helping, overseeing and forming collaborations with mental health systems and which we say mental academic hospitals settings, and doing so many amazing things in the areas of mental health. And she is, in 2020, she established the research center at Rogers Behavioral Health and oversees a lot of the research activities throughout the Rogers system, which I believe there's over 19 locations nationwide.
23 now.
23. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. So anyway, Kelly, I know the first thing you want to talk about is the Rogers Research Center itself. So please, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you for having me, Don. It's actually exciting to talk about some of these things. My background specifically is actually in biomedical engineering. So I'm not a clinician by training, but I've been working in medical device development for quite some time. So after doing product development for several years, kind of started working more on the research side. In all areas, oncology, cardiology, neuroscience. And then about 5 years ago, I had the opportunity to join Rogers to develop the research center. So for folks who are familiar with Rogers, we're a high acuity mental health treatment system. As you mentioned, we continue to grow. We're in quite a few locations, multiple states, three inpatient hospitals here in Wisconsin. And Rogers has been around since 1907, really long time. We treat over 20,000 unique patients every year. And so our practices are actually on evidence-based practice and measurement-based care. And so utilizing research was something that was a big part of the history of Rogers. But the opportunity was really to build a research.
Okay, go ahead, Kelly.
So a lot of Rogers' clinical practice is already based on evidence-based practices. And so the opportunity for us was really to build a research center that would be collaborative across the field and that would focus on things that had the best potential to improve the care and the outcomes for our patients. And so that was the vision. We had a very generous donor come forward to get us started. And over the last few years, we've been able to benefit from competitive grant funding, federal grant funding, and ongoing support from donors. So our goal was to really combine what we know about biology and physiology and the sciences with the psychiatry and psychology and, you know, the practices around mental health, because we know that mental health is not just a thinking, feeling problem. It's really a whole body system, right? Our chemistry and our biology has a lot to say about how we respond to the environment. And so we wanted to learn more about how to incorporate the neurosciences and the genetics pieces so that we could treat the whole patient.
Neat. And you said you have some history you wanted to provide on that too. If you wanted to do a deeper dive into that.
Yeah, I mean, so we have three main areas that we're focused on. So our primary focus is on innovation in treatment delivery. So we're looking at technology, we're looking at environments, how we actually can bring treatment to patients. You know, like it or not, the COVID experience was one that forced a lot of us into the virtual world. And so we had to really balance that, you know, in-person versus virtual. And we've found pros and cons to both. And we've found certain patients can benefit from one or the other. So we learned a lot about that. We're also from a delivery perspective, we're starting to bring in small portable devices. There's a lot of interest in portable low current brain stimulation. So there are, put it simply, there are five brain waves that really control everything that happens in our brain. And one of them that we're particularly interested in is called Alpha. It kind of sits in the middle, and it's somewhere between calm thinking and active learning or problem solving. And so that's the part that really allows us to be mindful and focused and helps us sleep well. And so there's a lot of technology that's actually being cleared and hitting the market that allows us to focus on those types of things. So that can really enhance a patient's ability to respond to treatment. Of course, we want to explore that through the appropriate research practices, but we're excited about that. And then the other technology that's really exciting that I think a lot of people are just becoming more familiar with is virtual reality. There are some really high quality applications and devices available today that can help us administer treatments like many folks are probably familiar with cognitive behavioral therapy. And there's a component of cognitive behavioral therapy that's called exposure therapy. So really the gist of it is we work with patients to really engage with those fears that lead to anxiety. And then they learn how to recognize and process and improve their resilience and their tolerance for those types of things. Well, imagine if someone has anxiety around driving or severe weather. And those are things that you can't necessarily take someone into that situation in real time to work on those skills. And so with virtual reality, we can actually use generative AI to create those things. And so it's given us a breadth of opportunities from a treatment perspective, potential treatment perspective. And so we're piloting some technology now in our in one of our clinics in Oconomowoc. And then the other end of virtual reality is actually on the mindfulness piece. And so a lot of our treatments are actually focused on teaching people how to really be with their thoughts and really, you know, kind of remove themselves from high anxiety thoughts and experiences. And, you know, I have trouble with mindfulness, right? We're all so busy and someone says, you know, let me guide you through a mindfulness experience. You know, I get about 10 seconds in and I'm thinking about, you know, what groceries I need to buy and how much laundry I have to do. So with virtual reality, if anyone has used devices like the Meta Quest or the Apple goggles, you really are immersed in an environment that's unlike anything you've seen before. And so we're doing a study with virtual reality for mindfulness, try to see if we can lead our patients into understanding what that true mindfulness really feels like. And so they know what's possible and it becomes really a positive experience. So so treatment delivery is one aspect of what we're doing. And then the other side is the genetics piece of all of this. So the biology around, you know, how we behave and the nature versus nurture and, you know, genetics really play a big part in not only how we respond to our environment, but what conditions we may be predisposed to because our parents carry similar genetics. And then there's a whole other field of genetics, which is called pharmacogenomics, which is what are those genetic markers in our metabolism that ultimately will help us understand better what medications we may respond to. And so the field of pharmacogenomics has been really expanding. And the challenge is that we don't really have good data yet about how to apply it clinically. And so that's where more research is really needed to understand if we have this information, can we help predict a little better what medications patients may respond to. And so that's another area from a research perspective we're very excited about. And then the third piece, as I mentioned, is really how the brain works, that neuroscience. And so we're doing a lot there to try to see if we can come up with better measures, diagnostic measures for mental health diagnoses. Rogers does a phenomenal job with what we call patient-reported outcomes. We do a lot of assessments, quantitative assessments. A lot of that is asking patients about their symptoms. And so we're really eager to get to some of those more direct measures like we might have, you know, when we go to the doctor and have a blood test done. So just a little different approach. But those are kind of our key focus areas.
Sorry, I had my mic muted. When you were talking about COVID and people finding that they really had to exist in the virtual world to continue doing their work, you know, it led me to this question of like the increasing challenges for the treatment side on mental and behavioral health with the influence of technology and the internet and all the time we spend on our smartphones. And so I was going to kind of ask about the challenges they provide. And then also, like I said, I'm glad that you mentioned there's also you're utilizing that technology to its advantage with regards to the virtual realities and some of the other possibilities. But what do you identify, though, are some of the challenges of all this increased reliance or usage of technology and that opposes what impacts it could have negatively on mental health?
Yeah, well, I know, I think we were already kind of on that trend of using technology more than really interacting with each other. And I think COVID just kind of, you know, accelerated that a little bit.
Yeah.
What you'll see is a lot of apps and programs and products that people can buy and download now that they can, you know, kind of work through anxiety or depression symptoms at home on their own. You know, I don't know that we have really good data that would suggest those experiences, those applications are really going to be giving people the outcomes that they're seeking. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for professional human interaction.
Yes.
And just to be clear, or as a reminder too, the you know, the level of care that Rogers provides is pretty high acuity, right? So by the time patients are coming to Rogers for support, they've probably been through outpatient treatment. They probably tried a few different things, but we know that we can deliver care through virtual programming. We had to during COVID, that we didn't have a choice, right? And we actually did some quantitative research on the virtual outcomes, and they were good. They were acceptable to us. But what we also find is that there are certain patients that will benefit and certain patients that won't. And so there are some conditions that really are going to benefit from someone being in a residential treatment program versus doing something virtually. And so, you know, there are pros and cons to both. But
I apologize for interrupting. I noticed there's been an influx of online therapy sessions with licensed professionals. And, you know, is that, how's the effectiveness as from what you can tell, like what has been some of the, I guess, positive outcomes? I mean, one, it seems in theory, you could argue it may be more affordable.
Yeah. I think there are pros and cons, right? I mean, the good news is we're doing better with the stigma piece, right? Like we're accepting that
that's still a problem.
Everyone can use a little help sometimes working through emotions, and and then there's the cost and the access part, right? Like some folks, especially people who are in frontline professions, you know, teachers, nurses, doctors, first responders, right? You don't necessarily have time in the middle of the day to go to an appointment, and so the virtual option I think makes it more accessible. And I think, again, it really depends on the severity of the problem. And whether someone can find the right person to work with. And that's a big part of it, right? Making sure that the therapist or the clinician or physician that you're working with is someone who, you know, who understands and can meet you where you are. So, like I said, there are pros and cons, but I think the biggest one is that we're really pushing through some of this stigma and, people have resources to seek out, and that's a positive thing.
Yeah. Cause, as I mentioned, I had a family member that had a really difficult case of I guess what they still call depression. I know there should be better terms for it. That was more than 30 years ago. And there was a real concentrated effort to hide this from our community where we were from, because this family member was a big hero, you know, growing up. And yeah, and like I said, that stigma, you know, was very big. And over 30 years later, though, it's still there. And there's still families that people that are concerned about the public exposure to that or the public's reaction. And unfortunately, there is certain elements of a public reaction that maybe are not kind or that are judgmental in a bad way. But tell us about some of those specifics about where you're kind of pushing through on that or where we're making improvements.
Well, you mentioned the you're the family member who has kind of that heroic background. There's a lot in the helping professions in particular that we're very interested in. We have a five-year collaboration now with the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin Charitable Foundation that we're really proud of. And there's a validated assessment called the Professional Quality of Life that does apply to those like nurses, teachers, first responders, veterans, and we can get a good sense of, you know, these are high compassion roles, right? And so you put a lot of time and energy into helping other people that can actually take a lot out of you, and especially when you take on their trauma. And so there are measurements around secondary traumatic stress as well as, you know, the compassion piece.
Sure.
So with the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, back in 2018, the International Association of Firefighters did a survey of North American firefighters. They had some data. The Wisconsin group wanted to understand how we compared to that. And so we worked with them to do an anonymous survey that's been 5 years running now. We're moving toward doing some more prospective interventions with them as well. But what we're finding is that the stigma piece has improved, but it's still a problem. There is a higher degree of potential depression and PTSD that we're finding. We need to do more work to really understand what that means and how to support that. But what's been so impressive for us is that as we've collaborated together, we've been able to identify opportunities for new programming. Rogers opened a program recently called Firewatch that's really aimed at veterans and first responders. So we know that the treatment has to look different, and we know that there's a huge need, but it's also a very rewarding collaboration to have that, you know, we can help the folks that really help all of us. So
sure. How are we doing on time, Max? About 1 minute. So terrific. Kelly, I hope you'll stick around for the second podcast. I'd love to talk more about the work you're doing with the firefighters and also some of the other areas about, mental health in Waukesha and what we can do. I know from my time on the council, when constituents would call about mental health concerns, that was always kicked over to the county because the county with the Health and Human Services oversees that for the city of Waukesha and the other cities in the county. But we'd love to talk about what all of us as average citizens can do to improve mental health or to pursue opportunities to maintain health, mental health and how they can go about asking for help when needed. This is such a big area to unpack, and I'm really glad that you're with us. So I encourage everyone to stick around for part two of this podcast with Dr. Kelly Piasek of Rogers Behavioral Health. And Yeah, and looking forward to, like I said, larger discussion. So thank you for sticking around, for being here for part one. Stick around for part two with myself and Dr. Kelly Piasek here on This Week in Waukesha. Thank you.